Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After Midnight.
For most of her life, driving had been connected to memories of her father. He was the one who taught her when she was 16, sitting beside her in an old sedan and pretending to be much calmer than he probably was. He never yelled even when she rolled through a stop sign during one of her first lessons or took a corner too fast and made him grab the door handle. He had a way of correcting her without making her nervous, usually with the same few reminders repeated often enough that they stayed with her long after she stopped needing instruction. Slow down before the curve. Leave yourself more room. Watch farther ahead. Even as an adult, she sometimes thought of those things while she drove. If she found herself following someone too closely, she would remember how he used to tell her to back off. If rain started coming down hard, she could almost hear him reminding her that getting somewhere 10 minutes later was better than not getting there at all. Her father had been gone for 9 months when the strange thing happened. His death had been sudden enough that the family never really had time to prepare for it. He was 68, and as far as anyone knew, in reasonably good health, when he suffered a massive heart attack at home one morning. By the time the ambulance arrived, there was nothing anyone could do. For the first few months afterward, she thought about him constantly. Certain songs on the radio reminded her of him, as did the hardware store they had gone to together for years, and a dozen other ordinary things she had never realized were connected to him until he was gone. Every once in a while, something would happen, and she would automatically think that she should call Dad, only to remember a second later that she couldn't. By the time autumn arrived, those moments were becoming less frequent. The grief was still there, but it no longer filled every hour of every day. She went to work, saw friends, ran errands, and made plans for weekends. She could talk about her father without immediately feeling like she might cry, and life had started becoming normal again. Or at least whatever normal was going to look like without him. The night of the drive was completely ordinary. She had gone to dinner at a friend's house about 40 minutes from where she lived. She had made the drive plenty of times before, and most of it followed a two-lane highway that ran through open farmland before eventually reaching the edge of town. She left a little after 10. It was cool but clear. There had been no rain, and traffic was light, which was typical for that time of night. Every few miles, another vehicle approached from the opposite direction, its headlights briefly filling the windshield before disappearing behind her. But for long stretches, she had the highway to herself. She wasn't tired and hadn't been drinking. She had a bottle of water in the cup holder and listened to music for the first part of the drive, but after 20 minutes or so, she turned the radio off. She liked driving in quiet sometimes, especially late at night, and nothing about that evening felt unusual. That was one of the things she would remember most clearly afterward. There had been no uneasy feeling and no sense that someone was watching her. She wasn't thinking about ghosts or death, and she wasn't thinking about her father. Her mind was on work because one of her co-workers had announced that afternoon that she was leaving, which meant everyone's schedules would probably be shuffled around until someone new was hired. She was mentally rearranging the following week and wondering whether she would have to cancel a lunch she had already planned when she passed the last gas station before a long, rural stretch. From there, the highway became much darker. There were no streetlights, only a few houses sitting far back from the road, occasional farm buildings and long stretches with nothing but fields on either side. She knew the route well enough that the darkness didn't bother her, and she set the cruise control a little below the speed limit. About 10 minutes later, she could see a familiar grain elevator in the distance and knew she was roughly halfway home. The highway ahead dipped slightly and then climbed toward a long curve that bent to the right. Her father had always disliked that curve. It wasn't considered especially dangerous, but drivers tended to approach it too quickly because the road looked straighter than it really was until they were almost into the turn. There wasn't much shoulder along one side either, and whenever her father rode with her, he usually reminded her to slow down before they reached it. She had heard him say it dozens of times over the years. That night, though, she wasn't thinking about the curve or about him. She was still several hundred yards away when she suddenly heard her father's voice from the passenger side of the car. It was clear enough that she turned her head before she even had time to think about what she was doing. He said her name first, then told her to slow down in the same sharp, unmistakable tone he had used years earlier when teaching her to drive and thought she wasn't paying enough attention. Her foot came off the accelerator immediately. For a second, she stared at the empty passenger seat, completely confused. Then instinct took over and she hit the brakes, not hard enough to skid, but much harder than she normally would have slowed for that curve. The car quickly dropped from highway speed as she gripped the steering wheel and tried to process what had just happened. The radio was off, her phone was lying face down in the cup holder, and there was nobody else in the car. She barely had time to register any of that before she reached the rise just ahead of the curve. Her headlights swept across the pavement in front of her, illuminating something that had been completely hidden from view only seconds earlier. That was when she saw why she had needed to slow down. Just beyond the curve, a pickup truck was sitting partly sideways across her lane. It looked as though the driver had lost control and spun before coming to a stop against the edge of the road. The front end was damaged, one headlight was out, and the truck was positioned badly enough that anyone coming around the curve at full speed would have very little time to react. There was also a man standing near the driver's side door, waving both arms and trying to get her attention. Because she had already slowed down, she had enough time to brake safely and move toward the opposite side of the road. She passed the truck at little more than 20 miles an hour, pulled onto the shoulder several yards beyond it, and sat there for a moment with both hands gripping the steering wheel. Only then did she realize how badly she was shaking. She looked in the rearview mirror and saw the man still standing beside the truck. No other vehicles were approaching in either direction, so she grabbed her phone and got out. The driver appeared shaken but wasn't seriously injured. He explained that he had swerved to avoid a deer and lost control, clipping the guardrail before the truck spun around. His phone had been thrown somewhere inside the cab during the accident, and he hadn't been able to find it in the dark. She called 911 while he continued trying to warn approaching traffic. As they waited, another vehicle came around the curve much faster than she had. Its brake lights flashed suddenly, and the driver swerved just enough to avoid the back of the pickup before continuing down the road. Watching it happen made her stomach turn because that could easily have been her. The man beside the truck seemed to realize the same thing. He told her she had been the first person to come around the curve slowly enough that he hadn't been afraid she was going to hit him. And he assumed she must have seen his hazard lights from farther back. She hadn't. From where she had been when she heard her father's voice, the truck had been completely hidden. She didn't tell him that, though. She simply said she had slowed down before the turn and left it at that. A deputy arrived within several minutes, followed by an ambulance and eventually a tow truck. Once it was clear the driver was going to be all right and the road was being controlled, she was told she could leave. She got back into her car and closed the door, but for several seconds she didn't start the engine. The passenger seat looked exactly as it always had. Her purse was on the floor, a jacket was folded against the seat back, and there was nothing there that could explain what she had heard. She checked her phone anyway. There had been no incoming call, no voicemail had played, and no video or audio file was open. The radio remained off. She even turned it on briefly, wondering whether she had somehow heard a voice from a commercial or talk segment before shutting it off, but it was still tuned to the music station she had been listening to earlier. None of that explained why the voice had sounded like her father. And more importantly, none of it explained the timing. She stayed below the speed limit for the rest of the drive home. By the time she pulled into her driveway, she had already started trying to talk herself out of what she thought had happened. Her father had taught her to drive and had always warned her about that curve. Maybe some part of her brain had remembered the danger before she consciously did and supplied his voice because that was how she associated the warning. That made more sense than believing her dead father had spoken from the passenger seat, and she wanted it to make sense. The problem was how real it had sounded. This hadn't been a memory drifting through her mind or one of those moments when she imagined what her father would have said. She had heard the voice clearly enough that she had turned toward the passenger seat, expecting to see someone there. She barely slept that night. The next morning, she told herself the entire thing would feel less strange in daylight, but it didn't. She kept replaying those few seconds before the curve, trying to remember whether she had seen something without realizing it. Maybe a reflection from the truck's remaining headlight had been visible through the trees, or perhaps she had noticed the glow from the hazard lights on the road ahead. Maybe there had been some subtle clue that registered subconsciously and caused her to slow down. But she remembered the road clearly, and there had been nothing. For several days, she told no one. It wasn't because she thought people would make fun of her. She simply didn't know how to explain it without making it sound more certain than she felt. Saying that she heard her dead father warn her about an accident sounded like a conclusion, and she wasn't ready to make one. Eventually, she told her mother. She started with the accident and explained how close she had come to reaching the curve at full speed. Only after that did she mention the voice. Her mother was quiet for a moment before asking exactly what she had heard. She repeated the words and tried to describe the tone. It had been firm, almost impatient, but not frightened. It was the way her father sounded when he wanted one of his children to react immediately rather than ask questions. Her mother knew the tone, and so did her brother when she told him a few days later. Neither of them tried to convince her it had been their father, but neither dismissed it either. Her brother reminded her that their dad had always been especially particular about driving and had given the same warnings to all of them for years, especially on dark roads and unfamiliar curves. That almost made the experience easier to explain. For the next few weeks, she found herself thinking about it every time she got behind the wheel. She would occasionally turn toward the passenger seat without meaning to, half expecting to hear the voice again, but she never did. She drove the same highway several times and passed the curve in daylight. Seeing it again bothered her more than she expected because from the spot where she remembered hearing her father, the road ahead disappeared completely beyond the rise. Even knowing where the accident had been, she couldn't see that section until she was nearly on top of it. There was no way she could have seen the truck. She held on to her original explanation anyway. Her brain knew the curve. Her father had warned her about it many times. And maybe that memory had simply surfaced at exactly the right moment. It was a coincidence, she told herself. A strange one, certainly, but still a coincidence. Then, several weeks after the accident, she learned something about that night that made the timing even harder to dismiss. Several weeks later, she happened to hear from the man who had been driving the pickup. They had exchanged phone numbers that night because the deputy suggested he might need to contact her as a witness for the insurance company. Nothing ever came of that, and she had almost forgotten they had each other's information until he sent her a brief message thanking her again for stopping. They exchanged a few messages about the accident, and she asked how he was doing. He had been sore for several days, but otherwise was fine, and the truck was being repaired. Then he mentioned something that immediately took her back to those few seconds before the curve. He had been out of the pickup for less than a minute when she arrived. Until then, she had assumed the accident might have happened several minutes earlier. She imagined him standing beside the truck waving at traffic while she was still miles away, which at least left open the possibility that she had somehow noticed something before consciously realizing it. According to him, that wasn't what happened. He had swerved when the deer came into the road, hit the guardrail, and spun across the lane. By the time the truck stopped moving, he had to force the driver's door open because it was pressed close to the guardrail. He climbed out, realized his phone had disappeared somewhere inside the cab, switched on the hazard lights, and had barely made it around the back of the truck when he saw her headlights coming toward the curve. She read that part several times. The voice had come only seconds before she reached the rise. If his memory was accurate, her father had told her to slow down at almost exactly the same time the danger appeared on the road ahead. She didn't tell the man why that mattered. She thanked him for the information, told him she was glad he was doing well, and left the conversation there. For a while, though, the new detail brought the whole experience back. She found herself thinking again about every possible explanation she had already considered. Maybe seeing that curve ahead had triggered an old memory of her father warning her about it. Maybe her brain had created his voice so vividly that it seemed external. Maybe the timing really was nothing more than coincidence. She could accept all of those possibilities. What she had trouble accepting was how many things had needed to line up perfectly. She had to hear the warning before she could see the truck. She had to react without hesitating. She had to slow enough that when she finally came over the rise, she still had plenty of room to stop. If she had spent even a few seconds trying to figure out why she thought she heard her father, the outcome might have been very different. Her mother had a simpler view of it. When she mentioned what the driver had told her, her mother listened and then said that her father had spent her entire childhood worrying about keeping his children safe. If there were any way, he could still do it. Warning her about a truck in the road sounded exactly like something he would do. She didn't know if she believed that, but she liked the thought. Over time, the experience stopped occupying so much of her attention. She continued using the same highway, and eventually she could approach the curve without immediately thinking about that night. The damaged guardrail was repaired. There was no sign of where the pickup had come to rest, and to anyone else driving through, it was once again just another bend in a rural road. The first few times she drove it alone at night, however, she always turned the radio off before she reached it. Part of her expected to hear the voice again. She never did. There were no other warnings, no unexplained sounds, and no sense that someone was riding beside her. Once that night was over, whatever had happened seemed to be over too. That actually made the experience more convincing to her in a strange way. If grief had caused her to start hearing her father, she thought she might have expected it to happen again. She missed him just as much on other days. She drove when she was tired, worried, or distracted plenty of times after that night. There were other curves, other dark roads, and other situations where the memory of his driving advice could easily have surfaced, but she never again heard his voice the way she had that night. She still thought of him, of course. Sometimes when the weather was bad or traffic was heavy, one of his old reminders would come into her mind. She knew the difference between remembering his voice and hearing it. What happened on that highway had been different. Years later, when she told the story, she was careful about how she described it. She didn't claim that her father had appeared in the car or that she had proof people could communicate after death. She knew how easily the mind could do strange things, particularly after losing someone important. All she could say with certainty was that she had been driving toward a curve she knew well, with no idea that a wrecked pickup was blocking part of the road ahead. Before she could possibly see it, she heard her dead father say her name and tell her to slow down. She listened. Seconds later, she understood why. Maybe it was memory, instinct, and coincidence arriving together at exactly the right moment. Maybe some part of her noticed something her conscious mind never registered. Or maybe her father, who had spent years sitting beside her and reminding her to be careful, found one more chance to do it when she needed him most. She has never heard his voice in the car again, but she has never forgotten the one time she did.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.